Now, today is Palm Sunday. As you're coming in, you should have received a palm cross. If for some reason you didn't, would you put your hand up and one of our amazing ushers will get one of those to you, because you'll be doing something with it a little bit later in the message. I won't make you do anything weird with it, I promise, but you might want that. So anyways, I see a hand. So anyways, if somebody could keep it in the back, could keep track of hands and get some of those out. And because it's Palm Sunday, we wanted to hear one of the accounts of what it was like when Jesus entered Jerusalem. So I've asked Grace Peterson if she would come up and read that for us. Grace is one of the amazing teens in our youth group, and she is I think she's a remarkable young lady. So, and out of reverence to God's word, and especially to the Gospels, I invite us to stand as we hear God's word read together. And I invite you, even as you're listening, just to ask the Lord, what especially do you want me to hear today? All right, Grace.
After Jesus had said, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethage and Bethany at the hill called Mount Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone says, why are you untying it? Say, the Lord needs it. Those who were sent ahead went and found it, as he told them. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked, why are you untying the colt? They replied, the Lord needs it. They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As they went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they have seen. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Some of the Philippians in the crowd said to Jesus, teacher, rebuke your disciples. I tell you, he replies, if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, if you, even you, had only known on this day what you bring peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The day will come upon when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you on in every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and your children, within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time God's coming to you.
Thanks, Grace. Please have a seat. He had been praying for this day every day of his life. That's why he was at the side of the road on the Sunday afternoon, waving the palm branches. It had been 150 years since the nation of Israel had anything like what you would think of as freedom. And he longed for it. Let's call him Benjamin. But his great, great, great grandfather had told him a story that was passed down to his great-great-grandfather and his great-grandfather and his grandfather and his father and to him, that happened 150 years prior to this moment. Maybe you've heard this story as well. You've probably heard bits of it. The story of the Maccabees. The Maccabees. The word in Greek means hammer. Simeon and Judah, Eleazar, Jonan, Jonathan, the five Maccabee brothers. How at the time, the Greek Empire, you've heard of the Greek Empire, it had taken over everything, including Israel. And all worship in the temple had either been stopped or had been corrupted. It was so corrupt, there was even a statue of Zeus in the Gentile courtyard. And they would slaughter pigs there. But as the Maccabee brothers built up a peasant army, you could say, they came into Jerusalem and they were waving palm branches. And they were shouting, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." They were shouting their hosannas as well, a word in Hebrew that just means, "Please save us." And the Maccabee brothers and their peasant army, they stormed Jerusalem. They got into the temple and they kicked out those Gentiles. They knocked down the statue. They returned the temple to right worship again. And you've probably heard this part of the story. There was a temple candle, but there was only one day worth of oil supply for the candle, but they lit the candle and it stayed. It stayed lit for 8 days because it took 7 days for more of the sacred oil to be made. It was a miracle. You still, Jewish people today, still remember that miracle. It's called Hanukkah. That was 150 years ago. Benjamin had heard those stories. And he longed for that freedom. Now, the Greeks weren't in charge anymore, of course. They had been taken over by the Romans, who, well, while there was still a degree of freedom in the temple, that was about it. They were taxed on every side. Taxes, 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 tributes. Taxed every which way. You know what it's like to have to ask permission? For your own government to have to ask permission to the invading army to do anything? It's humiliating. That's why every day of his life, Benjamin prayed, "Lord, send an anointed one, a Messiah. Send one like Moses." The one who led their people out of Egypt from slavery to freedom, because we are enslaved to these Romans. Or maybe one like Yeshua, like Joshua, one who could push the Gentiles out of land they don't belong in so that God's people could reside there. Or maybe an anointed one like King David, who would rule and reign and bring Israel back to its place of greatness in the world. It's supposed to be a light to the world. So he longed for it every single day. He prayed for it every single day. And then he heard the stories about Yeshua, Jesus. And he was filled with hope. Stories are he had fed 5,000 people at once. Hey, Malcolm, there we go. All right, fed 5,000 people at once. You know, someone who could feed 5,000 people could probably scare off 5,000 Roman soldiers, don't you think? That'd be mighty nice. He'd prayed for a demon-possessed man, and a legion of demons had left the man, gone into a herd of pigs, and the pigs took a flying leap off the cliff. He could think of some pigs he'd like to have take a flying leap off a cliff. Huh. It's Jesus who made the lame to walk. Perhaps he could make a few of those walking soldiers lame. He He longed for freedom. He longed for a Messiah who could come and finally bring the kind of change in their nation that they needed. So he was awfully hopeful as Jesus entered the city, and some things looked awfully similar. Here's this miracle worker. The crowds gathered. The cloaks were laid down on the street. Palm branches were waved. Hosannas. This is good. There was one detail that was a little off, a little funny. Is this Yeshua entered Jerusalem? He had the wrong ride. You're supposed to come in on a horse, because that's what the commanding generals do. They come in on a nice horse. Jesus, he had a compact. It was very small horse. There's something wrong with it. But then he remembered there was a prophecy about this. Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9. Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout, daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly. I'm not sure I like that part. But riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. Okay. Prophecy is being fulfilled. The king is coming. Okay. We know what he's going to do next. This is good. When the Maccabees, when they came to free the land, the first place they went is the temple, because you're going to kick the Gentiles out. And the first place Jesus went, as he enters Jerusalem, where did he go? That's good. But he kicked the wrong people out. He goes into the court of the Gentiles. And he kicks out the money changers. Not that the money changers are anything great, but he's supposed to kick out the Gentiles. This is not their temple. This is not their people. They're not supposed to be here. Instead, he kicks out the people who are making such a ruckus in the court of the Gentiles, that Gentiles that came to worship God couldn't. The same Jesus. He's watching. There were hopeful signs. He was a really good teacher. But man, he said some stuff. It just rubbed him the wrong way. Like, he didn't kick out the Gentiles. In fact, he seemed to welcome ones that came with faith. He's supposed to lead the country in greater degrees of holiness and righteousness. This is time to get back to the fundamentals of religion. And here's this teacher. He's talking to prostitutes, tax collectors. These are icky people. He even ate with them. This isn't the kind of Messiah Benjamin had signed up for. Furthermore, as this Jesus is teaching in the temple courts, the one group of people that he would criticize most frequently were the one group of people that actually got things right, the Pharisees. He's criticizing all the quote-unquote good people of the country. What kind of Messiah does that? His hopes had started high for Jesus, but apparently this was not the Messiah he was looking for. And that's why Benjamin, along with many others, after he had heard that the Sanhedrin had given their ruling, and they called for Jesus to die, that's why he went with them. That's why he was one of the voices in the crowd early on that Friday morning in Pilate's courtyard that called out, crucify him, Crucify him. What do you want me to do with this, Jesus? Crucify him. I'm going to pause the story. Now, the reason I wanted to tell that and kind of make up a story is to give you a whole bunch of historical context in hopefully an interesting way. Because one of the big questions we have to wrestle with on Palm Sunday, maybe you've wondered about this, is how does the crowd turn so fast? I mean, so Sunday, Jesus rides into Jerusalem. Everyone's like, yay, Jesus, yay, Jesus. You know, palm branches, it's a parade. It is truly a festive occasion. And on Friday, some of those same people, if not most of those same people, are calling for his execution. What's going on? And I think it's important that we understand a little bit of the history and the context of that time, because if we're being really honest, we're going to see some parallels. Because the human heart hasn't actually changed. Now, and it's kind of funny to me, a little funny, ironic, I guess, that even as Jesus is riding into Jerusalem, he sees exactly what's going on in the hearts of the crowd. I don't know if you picked up on that. I'm going to read a passage from Luke 19. So it's one of the same passages that Grace just read so well. So Jesus says this. He's riding into Jerusalem on this donkey. He is weeping over the city. So you can imagine, everyone else is having a party, and Jesus has tears streaming down his face. Why? Because he's looking at the people of Jerusalem, and he says this to them, and to a certain degree, I believe he's saying this to us as well. If you, even you, had only known on this day, what would give you peace. But now it is, what's the word? It's hidden from your eyes. In other words, the people of Jerusalem, they're looking at Jesus. They're looking at him riding in on a donkey, fulfillment of prophecy, all of these things. They know all the stories. They know what he's done, and they're looking right at him, and they can't see him. It's not because they were stupid. It's not because they were fickle, though perhaps some of them were. It's because they were looking the Messiah that they were looking for, the answers they were looking for, was very different than the Messiah that was in front of them. You see, they, like us, like all of us, you know, they had problems going on in their life that were pretty big. And their number one concern, understandably, was, God, how can you help me solve these problems today? And they were so fixated on what they wanted God to do for them that they couldn't see the bigger picture of what God was actually doing. I don't know about you. Well, I know a little bit about you. You got some big stuff going on in your life. I mean, big things. Hard things. Me too. And most mornings when I wake up and I pray, and I do, and I hope you do as well, as you look at my prayer list, you know, my prayer list tends to focus on the people and the issues that are closest in my circle. So I'm praying for my kids. I'm praying for my wife, praying for extended family, praying for needs in the church, needs with friends, praying for God's provision, the finances, and decision-making, and wisdom, and peace, and all of those things. And those things are legit, and they're important. And I've seen God answer those prayers again and again and again and again, and I hope you have too. I've seen his goodness. I've seen his power. If you're a praying person, I hope you make prayer lists, because it's pretty amazing when you pray for something, then you come back to the same list a week later and you go, oh, wow. God helps with the problems of life. Jesus meets us there. If you're sick, call out to him. He brings healing. If you're addicted, call out to him. He brings freedom. If you're lonely, depressed, hurting, anxious, call out to him. The Lord loves you, and he answers, he answers, he answers, he does. And that's a great thing. And Jesus has his own agenda. God has his own agenda. So often we ask the Lord to relieve our suffering when the bigger picture is that God meets us in our suffering. In fact, he joins us in our suffering. And the story of Jesus, that he actually used suffering to redeem the world. Ironically, the very thing that most of us are praying would go away. So we have these little crosses. Would you take your little cross out? Now, these are crosses that are made of palm leaves, because it's Palm Sunday, yay. And we think of the cross like this. It's this powerful reminder of what Jesus endured for us, that he would allow himself to be inflicted by the greatest, like, most horrific way of dying. I mean, you've heard the word excruciating, like, I'm in excruciating pain. The word excruciating literally means as though being crucified, excruciating. You hear the etymology in the word, right? That Jesus would die in the most painful way possible, as he was paying for your sin and mine, as he was redeeming the world. Well, tell me what you think of this illustration, okay? Very often, we look at the same cross and we do this with it. And this in the hands of an 8-year-old boy. What is it? That's right. Now, I'm going to find really quickly who were raised in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, okay? Because you know what comes to my mind? It's a lightsaber, my friends. That's right. You know, and for an 8-year-old boy to turn a cross into a sword, or even better, a lightsaber, because they're so cool, is developmentally appropriate. It's what we do when we're immature, and it's just cool because, I mean, who doesn't like a sword fight? Especially a play sword fight. Super fun, right? For many of us, that's also where, you know, our faith, it starts. You know, it's the Jesus, like, because the reason why we like swords is that swords help us to do something that we couldn't do on our own. A sword in whether it's in the hand of an 8-year-old boy, or even better, in the hands of someone who actually knows what to do with a sword. A sword is an incredibly powerful tool, right? A sword can help you get your way. A sword can help you bring justice. A sword can beat back the bad guys. And so often we turn to God just like that. God, would you help me with my problem? Would you help me get victory over this issue in my life? And I want you to know, let me see your eyes, that's a legitimate prayer. That's a legitimate prayer. God brings healing. God brings hope. God brings help. God brings freedom from addiction. God brings strength and peace to your soul. God can heal your sickness. I've seen him do it. But sadly, for many of us, our faith never matures past the 8-year-old playing with a sword. And we can be so fixated on what we're asking Jesus to do for us that we just fail to see that Jesus has his own agenda in the world. That he might, in fact, he usually is using our hardship to bring about even greater good. So here's what something I want to challenge you to do right now. And then something I would challenge/invite you to do this week. Is I'd like you to write a message to Jesus on the cross. Now there's pens in the seat pockets in front of you, and I realize some of these ballpoint pens are a little hard to write on palm. I've tried it. I had about a 50% success rate, so if yours doesn't work so good, it's my fault. Of course it is. But you can maybe you've got a pen in your purse or something. Or you take it home. But here's what I invite you to do today. If you can, even if that's with a ballpoint pen that doesn't leave a good mark, you're just scratching it out, is write something to Jesus. Here's a couple of starter ideas. So often we miss what Jesus is actually doing. It's hidden from our eyes because we're so caught up on it. So maybe your prayer this morning would be something like this. Lord, I'm watching. Help me to see you. Or as I was thinking about this one earlier, and just how I want to put on mine, and I don't know if you can pull in tight on for the camera shot for a second here, but just to say, right on mine, say, not my will. Jesus, you've helped me with so much. So, Lord, not my will, but yours be done. I'd like you to take a moment and write something on that cross. Whatever the Lord's laying on your heart, just take a moment and do that. Whatever you want to say to him. And here's the other part that's a little bit of a challenge. See, this week is Holy Week. One of the liabilities about doing Palm Sunday and the next Sunday is Easter is that we kind of go from, yay, God, it's Palm Sunday, to, yay, God, it's Easter Sunday. And we go from one celebration to the next celebration. And we miss the fact that a whole lot happened in between. It's Holy Week. Holy Week. So maybe for you that would mean to be a part of some of our Holy Week services. So Maundy Thursday, you'll hear about it more in a minute from Pastor Paul, 6:30. Remember the Last Supper, Jesus' final words to his disciples before his crucifixion. Or Good Friday. It's called a tenebrae service, the service of light, as candles are extinguished as we remember Jesus' final words on the cross. That could be a good way. If you're not really a midweek person, you're like, I just do Sundays. Well, I give you permission to make an exception. I give you permission to start a new pattern in your life and try something new out. Or maybe, and perhaps this is especially true for those of you who are online and like you just, I mean, we got people that are part of our church from all over the country sometimes. It's pretty amazing. See if you can find a service wherever you happen to be. And if you really can't, just take some time in the Gospels. In the message notes, if you go online, see message, like, they can help you find those passages. But just read about Jesus' trial. Read about his crucifixion. read about what he did for you. And then come back on Easter Sunday, and I promise you the celebration is so much sweeter when we remember what he actually did. Lord, I'm watching. Lord, I don't want to miss what you're doing in my life. So I want to lead us in the time of prayer. And for us, we're going to find ourselves in kind of one of the areas. Both are legitimate, okay? For some of you today, you're just in Hosanna mode. Like you, it's Palm Sunday, and you're one of the people on the side of the street. And you're just calling out to the God and saying, God, please save me. Please save me. That's a legitimate prayer. Like if number one, you're like, God, just I need your help and I need it now. I urge you to pray that prayer. If you've never given your heart to Jesus, please do. I'm going to lead us in a prayer that could maybe get you started on that journey. God, please save me. God, please save me. God, please help right now. I need your help right now, please. That's a legitimate prayer. For others, I'm going to try to be careful in the way I say this because I'm not meaning to belittle anything. But if you've been walking with Jesus for a long time, and that is still the majority of your prayer, maybe it's time to grow up. And say, Lord, thank you for what you have done in my life. Thank you for the ways that you have met my needs. Lord, help me to see the part that I play in the bigger picture of what you're doing. You're not just redeeming my life. You're not just solving my problems. You're saving the world. And you did it through your suffering, through your death, through your sacrifice. Lord, teach me to follow you in suffering, not just in victory.